This meeting is now being recorded.
All right, well, good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, everyone. Welcome to the new GTLD Subsequent Procedures Subteam Track 2 Legal Regulatory Issues held on the 7th of September 2017 at 2100 UTC. In the interest of time, there will be no roll call. Attendance will be taken by the Adobe Connect room. If you're only on the audio bridge, could you please let yourself be known now? And I do have Jim Prendergast noted. All right, hearing no more names. I would like to remind all to please state your name before speaking for recording purposes, and please keep your phones and microphones on mute when not speaking to avoid any background noise. With this, I'll turn it back over to our chair, Michael Fleming. Please begin.
Thank you, Julie, and this is Michael Fleming for the record. Thank you, everyone, for joining us this week to discuss the continued registered protections with special emphasis on the background screening discussion. I'm using the slides that we used last week because we still need to discuss we still have CC2 comments that we need to discuss here. But as is the formality for all of our meetings, I just wanted to ask if anyone has an SOI update. Hearing none, I will move forward towards our discussion. Okay, so everyone has controlled their own slides. Okay, so I'm not controlling. I just want to remind everyone what our goal is here. Is to move towards deliberations and proposals or steps forward for the initial report. We just had a very long leadership meeting 2 hours ago. I haven't slept in about 20 hours still, so I can't really remember. But we are having a very tight schedule for work track two from the sound of it, and we are going to need to continue our weekly meeting schedule probably up until Abu Dhabi. And we depends on how far we are able to progress, but in some situations we may look at two meetings per week just to make sure we can get through all of our material and so we don't have any issues later saying that we didn't cover in specific material. My apologies to everyone for this delay. I think it's my own ability as co-chair here not to progress as quickly as we are able. At the same time, I wanted to go ahead and jump into this week's discussion. Just want to say that while it's not specifically... Yes, John, I object to two meetings per week, and that's why I'm considering other options, perhaps maybe looking at longer meetings, looking at other efficient ways to progress through the necessary material. Thank you for your statement, and we will take that back and see how we can best address these concerns as well as make as much progress as possible. I think we're on 2.3.3. Yes, here we are. And just before I begin, Steve, were we able to have Trang on today or?
Hi, Michael. This is Steve from staff. We are trying to track her down, but I'm having trouble doing so right now. So hopefully you're able to proceed without her for the moment. Thanks.
All right. Thank you. We were hoping to have Trang on today or someone from the GDD staff to kind of share with us their experiences with the background screenings and some of the challenges that they faced and to see if there weren't ways that we could better better efficient way to do them in the future and see if there aren't other aspects that we can introduce into policy that will allow for a quicker background check and a more cooperative background check for a lot of applicants. But that also depends on the comments that we have here, so let's go through with them. First of all, this discussion is related to our CC2 question 2.3.3. This is on slide 20, as Steve has kindly noted. I'm just going to go ahead and read the question since we do have participants only in audio today. ICANN staff, in its program implementation review report, identified a number of challenges in performing background screening, particularly because there were many different types of entities to screen, example given, ranging from top 25 exchanges to newly formed entities with no operating history, and because it is difficult to access information to conduct background screenings in some jurisdictions / countries. Do you think that the criteria, requirements, and or the extent to which background screenings are carried out require any modifications? Should there be any additional criteria added to future background screenings? For example, should the previous breach by the registry operator and or any of its affiliates of a registry agreement or registrar accreditation agreement be grounds for ICANN to reject a subsequent application for a TLD by that same entity and or its affiliates? Why or why not? What other modifications would you suggest? Should background screening be performed at application time or just before contract signing time? Or both times? Please explain. Moving on. So our first comment is from the Registry Stakeholder Group, and the Registry Stakeholder Group supports maintaining the current criteria for background screenings. Excerpt from their comment is that the current criteria for background screenings are appropriate and were developed with the intent to protect registrants. Despite the challenges of performing the background screenings on some of the people and companies involved in the application, they should continue in substantially the same form. If anyone would like to chime in, have something to say in regards to this, please do so and raise your hand freely, and I will call it. Moving on, slide 22. John Poole supports stricter requirements for background screening. The excerpt from his comments. In regards to the question, do you think that the criteria requirements and or the extent to which background screenings are carried out require any modifications? No, other than make them much stricter. John? Now, in regards to having different screening requirements, Validaeus, BRG, and Janik Scow actually support having specific requirements for specific categories of applicants. The excerpts from Validaeus' comment is, as stated in the application guidebook, applying entities that are publicly traded corporations listed and in good standing on any of the world's largest 25 bookstores, as listed by the World Federation of Exchanges, will be deemed to have passed the general business diligence and criminal history screening. In subsequent procedures, new GTLD applications which satisfy this criteria should not be required to provide detailed information relating to the entity, its officers, directors, and major shareholders. Sounds going crazy. Am I being able to... Is it the fan in the background? Sorry, there's no air conditioning in this room, so let me just turn it off. Can you hear me now? Mic check, 1, 2, 3. Michael's audio got suddenly loud. Right. Hold on some moment. Let me configure with it here. Confoodle with it, whatever it is. How's this sound? It's fine now. Wonderful. Okay. So I'll reread Validatus' comment from the beginning then. As stated in the application guidebook, applying entities that are publicly traded corporations listed and in good standing on any of the world's largest 25 stock exchanges, as listed by the World Federation of Exchanges, will be deemed to have passed the general business diligence and criminal history screening. In subsequent procedures, new GTLD applicants which satisfy this criteria should not be required to provide detailed information relating to the entity, its officers, directors, and major shareholders. If this will not be subject to background screening, as an additional point of review, consideration should be given to whether such a listed entity should be subject to the same level of information disclosure as is required for private entities, relating to its subsidiaries, officers, and directors. If it chooses to apply for a new GTLD through one of its subsidiary companies, Furthermore, there may be other classes of applicant which are not listed corporations, as described above, where there will nonetheless also have been adequate screening that would meet or exceed the screening that ICANN would perform. Thank you, Validatus. Moving on to the next comment. This is from the BRG, Brand Registry Group. The background check requirements imposed were not appropriate for all the different types of applicants. In particular, the procedures and criteria should be improved for dot brands, which on the whole were publicly listed companies. It was unreasonable for ICANN to demand personal address and date of birth information for these publicly listed companies, and it took a great deal of time and effort to persuade ICANN to relax the original demands. For these entities, it should be sufficient to list the same amount of detail for company directors as appears on corporate websites and company registration offices. A default of the registered office address or that of the company secretary should be provided for all directors. And from Janet Scow, we have suggest that GOTLDs run by public authorities and any applicant listed on any stock exchange do not go through criminal background checks, as public authorities already do that. I'm going to stop here and ask if there is support for this type of different background screening for different TLD types, different categories of TLD. Nobody's raising their hand, but if I may take off my co-chair hat for a moment, I have particular experience in this area, especially being in the Asia Pacific region, where the idea of private information in regards to directors and officers is taken with a much different regard, and it was exceptionally difficult whenever a large corporation, for at least for a dot brand, would change their officers. We would always have to list that information or send that new information to ICANN, and it got to the point where our clients were not even disclosing that information anymore. Would not push that, and we had to negotiate with ICANN on many different levels, and we were able to come to terms with very limited and minimum information. But we didn't, for example, we didn't disclose the exact date of birth. For example, we may have disclosed only the location of birth, and only the country at that. So in that instance, I can say that in the implementation of this, ICANN had seems that ICANN may have chosen for different entities at times what level of information was required, and that we may want to give ICANN more flexibility in that regard in some areas. Paul, you have your hand raised. Please go ahead.
Thanks. Paul McGrady for the record. Since we're kind of going off the script of these responding to these particular public comments, I do think we'd like to point out something more general, which is none of these standards of background checks are going to be worth anything if ICANN doesn't actually do it. I had a particular experience where we provided over 60 UDRP decisions in the name of a division, or perhaps it was an affiliate of an applicant, of another applicant, and those were provided twice. ICANN never responded to it, even though there was a clear requirement in the applicant guidebook not to have been a cyber squatter more than 3 or 5 times, whatever the amount of cyber squatting it is that we're prepared to tolerate from our new GTLD registry applicants. But it was much more than whatever was in the applicant guidebook. There was no response, and so therefore no board or staff action or inaction, because there was no response saying we are not going to do something, and so therefore the entire gamut of the accountability mechanisms were left off the table as a result of that. So the bottom line here is that whatever we end up recommending, I think we need to also recommend that ICANN not only have these standards, but they actually do it, and that if they do get a concern or complaint on the background check area, that they have to respond to the person who has submitted a concern or complaint and not just ignore them, so that that person can then use the appropriate accountability mechanisms to make sure that this stuff gets done instead of not done. So that's sort of comment number one. Comment number two is, of course, we should have different standards for publicly traded companies than we do for startups and other people that don't have other groups and that don't have the financial background materials that you can pull off of government websites and take a look at people's finances and that kind of thing. It's just a completely different setup altogether. And so I think we should encourage ICANN to take a realistic look. It's a little bit silly for an organization like ICANN to be doing background checks on organizations that have much tighter internal governance controls than ICANN does or ever could probably. And also, to a certain extent, to the extent that this is financial background as well, ICANN's investigators, all they're doing is pulling 10-Ks and looking at stuff that individual investors look at. And again, financially, not only internal governance controls, but from a financial standpoint, ICANN's balance sheet is a disaster compared to most of the dot brand applicants who are publicly traded companies who apply. ICANN doesn't, for example, have very much stored up in its reserves and things like that. So there's a little bit of farcical theater going on here when ICANN is, attempting to do a background screening on a, Fortune 100 company. I think that we should definitely cut back on some of the runaway costs of this new GTLD program, lower the application fee for publicly traded companies who are applying for dot brands, and let's, sort of get on, have ICANN get on with whatever real background screening they need to do for companies that they do not know as well. Thanks.
Thanks, Paul. That was very good feedback. And I'd also like to point out one area that you did say about lowering application fees for corporations as well. I'm going to assume specifically within the regards to dot brands, perhaps. If I'm wrong, please do correct me. But that does relate to our to our friends in WorkTrack 1, I believe. So that is definitely something, feedback that they can take back with them as well. Alan, you have your hand up and you've been waiting patiently. Please go ahead.
Sure. Thank you. Alan Greenberg speaking. Paul mentioned part of what I was going to say, and that's that not all applicants are equal, and if indeed we have a range of an individual who we've never heard of before to a publicly traded company, it's not clear that the same rules should apply to them all. So I think we need to be realistic. The other question I was going to ask you directly is, if the rules we put in place are not reasonable for certain cultures, let us say, then the real question is, if we well understood what it is we're trying to achieve with the rules, is there somewhere else that we can end up with the same end? Obviously, if we're talking about a publicly traded company, then maybe my first statement covers it, and the rest of the question isn't relevant. But we're going to have individuals and small companies from other cultures hopefully also applying. And how do we meet the end if the means that we suggested that fits well in North America and Western Europe does not fit well in the other cultures? Now, yes, we can go try to negotiate one by one and hope we can get equitable solutions, but that's not an optimal way of doing it. So I guess I'd like to understand, do we have other options to achieve the same end? Thank you.
Thank you, Alan. And co-chair hat off in reply. But those particular situations applied to Fortune 100 companies. And in the cultural aspect, not to get too veiled, but one way to look at it is this. If you go, I particularly within the APAC, but more of in your Eastern Asian countries, but if you go online to search for information for a specific individual, you will find 10 times as more information if that person was in, for example, North America or maybe Europe, as you would in this, and at least in Eastern Asia, in my experience. And it's very true for, it's even more limited for certain countries, but there's definitely a different thought and on privacy, and it's not only embedded within certain laws, but it's also cultural in and of itself. So what ways we could implement to achieve the same results that we are looking at doing in North America, for example, that's definitely something to think about. But something I would probably personally need to think about a bit more to try to figure out how we could achieve those same results. Greg, you also have your hand up. Please go ahead. Thank you.
Hey, Michael, it's Jim. Can I still get in the queue? Michael, it's Jim. Can I still get in the queue at some point?
Sorry, Jim.
Please go ahead.
Yes, I think I'll go and then Jim. My remark was just that I just happened to have a call with a client who requires bank background checks of all their vendors. At least that's their default position. But they have a relatively reasonable waiver process if the vendor has their own background check process in place. And some of the vendors, say cybersecurity vendors, have more rigorous background checks than my client does. So we have a two-page form that basically asks, do you check this, do you check that? And if basically they check all the boxes, it basically shows that their background check is reasonable under the circumstances, generally as good or better than ours. We sign the waiver, and then we don't require a specific background check done by our background check vendor that requires our vendor to send us the birth dates of their employees and such things as that. So long story short, maybe there should be a waiver process for those companies that already do background checks or have, maybe regulatory background checks done by their governments or whatever. But the idea that ICANN is going to do background checks, from scratch on everybody, and then to hear Paul's story that maybe they don't, or they don't take over the transom submissions on backgrounds, it's just disheartening. It just sounds like the whole thing is just a massive bureaucratic kerfluffle. We should certainly try to avoid, and a waiver process would seem to be entirely reasonable on something which, although culturally there may be more than one way to deal with this, at least there are there are general processes of background checks that are well recognized, so that ICANN could recognize the background check done by a third party, saying. So that we could move on with things. you know, very last, I think there is, you know, underlying this, and Michael, it's great that you're in a position to speak on these things, I have a lack of multicultural fluency in ICANN, and of course, you know, being an American who barely, you know, gets off the island of Manhattan, I'm not in a great position to talk about what happens in other cultures, but ICANN needs to do a better job of dealing with other cultures in a way that doesn't try to make them fit into the ICANN mold of what they think their counterparties look like. Thanks.
Thanks, Greg, and thank you for the support. Cheryl, before you, I have Jim. Jim, please go ahead.
Great. Thanks, Michael. Jim Prendergast for the record. So, you know, this whole talk of cultures actually put a four-letter word into my head. I apologize for using it, but, you know, GDPR is looming over a lot of other things that we're doing. I'm not a privacy attorney. In fact, I'm not an attorney at all. But I'm wondering, do people sense that privacy regulations like GDPR could have an impact on the type of information ICANN can or should be asking for as part of these background checks? Thanks.
Thanks, Jim. And I'm not a privacy lawyer either, but my understanding of that would be that if they make clear the purpose of what they're going to use that information for, and with applying for a TLD, you are agreeing to disclose that information, you are agreeing to have read that, then I would assume that that's complying with that. In the sense of the GDPR, or there's a requirement for having the waiver process, but also accepting the service. I'm not sure how to interpret that, but if anyone else on here has better privacy, more experience within privacy law, then please feel free to answer that question right after I go to Cheryl.
Thank you very much, Michael. Cheryl Langdonor for the record. And I'm not going to buy in on the privacy aspect, seeing as I am frequently arguably declared as being a most unprivate person. But I did want to recognize what Heather was saying in chat, that it appears to be a efficient and transparent process if we can rely on public information where it is possible. And I wanted to raise something which is almost almost the opposite of that from a cultural perspective, in what I will admit is a very small subsection of the global community, but still undoubtedly some possible parts of our potential applicants, and that is not only limited to small island states, but something that is frequently likely to be seen in small island states, and particularly in the emerging and developing economies and underserved regions. And that is where there can be enormous stability backing, and one would be able to take great heart and security in the knowledge that this was going to be a stable and highly successful operation with virtually no public information able to be sourced. And indeed, that may not just be a matter of the extent to which things are available online or even archived in a traditional way that those of us in the emerged economies are more used to. But it can be also something, well, as simple and as complicated as the fact that if you happen to be the president, the village chief, the whatever, daughter or son-in-law, the fact that your name as head of this emerging entity is enough to assure an absolute market and a high degree of financial backing and likely success in any venture you do. So I think here we might also want to look at, as Alan said, what is it we're trying to insure against or ascertain with these particular questions, and see whether there is perhaps more than one way to seek those assurances as best as possible whilst being reasonable for what ICANN is actually in the greater scheme of things. And to that end, of course, ICANN may have an advantage with its now well-established regional hubs. One would hope that there should be some form of network that could be accessed where we have some, dare I say, unorthodox requirements for these certifications or self-certifications. And I think we may want to entertain those, not as a rule, but as an exception from time to time. Thank you.
Thank you, Cheryl. Do we have anybody else with their hand up? No? Okay. Very good feedback, everyone. Thank you very much. I agree with Kieran that we need to ask ICANN in regards to the GDPR readiness project about the idea of backgrounds and subsequent procedures. Can we make that an action item? At least figure out how we can try to address that question? Thank you very much. Before we continue on, I just want to make sure we're on topic. And I think we've got a little bit more time. Sorry, yes, it's clear, and it was Heather's suggestion. Make sure that is clear. Thank you, Heather. And there, Janik Skow's last comment about suggesting that GOTLDs that are run by public authorities would have something similar to what we're talking about for example, Fortune 500 companies. Would anyone like to comment on that aspect, or shall I move on to the next comment? Paul McGrady, please go ahead.
Thanks. I actually think that's sensible. So, for example, if there might be a dot Chicago in the next round, and they've gotten the mayor of Chicago to write the letter saying that they're supporting this particular applicant to operate the dot Chicago, I do think there should be some deference that the mayor of Chicago is, not a completely, unsophisticated person who is going to do business with a rogue outfit. I think that ICANN could sort of take notice of that and say, okay, that's a real government saying someone's going to run a TLD that corresponds to their, major city name or capital city name or whatever. And that's, we don't necessarily have to go and spend a bunch of extra applicant money digging around too much in that party. We'll take some lower level of proof at that point. Thanks.
Paul, and thank you for the support. If there's no other comments, then I'm going to move on. All right. So, slide 25. Too fast. Industry stakeholder group, Validatus, and Janik Skow and Nominet provided input on facts that should or should not disqualify applicants. From the registry stakeholder group, currently previous adjudications of cyber squatting would bar a person or a company from participating in a TLD application. This makes sense because of the risk of a cyber-squatting TLD. However, breach of an RA or RRA may happen for a number of reasons and should not be grounds de facto for disqualification. Thank you, Registry Stakeholder Group. In the chat, Alexander Schubert has put an objection to the last comment that we discussed in regards to GOTLDs with government backing. I'm going to read it for the record, and if Alexander, you want to expand on it, then please go ahead. But the applicant for Dot Chicago might turn that around and claim that ICANN would check them out so the city doesn't have to do it. Alexander, would you like to expand on that, or can we have that and make sure we have that recorded as an objection towards that opinion? No? Okay. Then I will continue reading the comments. Thank you. So from Valadeus, and this is on the input on facts that should or should not disqualify applicants, but Valadeus has commented, anyone who has been found liable for cyber squatting and registrants who have lost more than two Uniform Dispute Resolution Policy, UDRP, cases should not be allowed to participate as an officer of a registry. Jerry Scow has commented, also remove or do enforce any reference to number of lost UDRPs or similar, as according to various blogs, should be checked large and small. Applicants RSPs in the 2012 rounds were actually not qualified. From Nominate, we have clearly an applicant who previously ran a failed. Alan, can I call on you right after I read the nominate comment, or do you want to?
Sure.
Okay, thank you. From nominate, we have clearly an applicant who previously ran a failed new GTLD should be scrutinized particularly carefully, but in general, each application and new GTLD contract should be considered as discrete transactions. And we don't think that performance in one area, such as breach of SLAs, where there may be specific one-off reasons for failure, should in principle be relevant in considering an application for another unconnected new GTLD. Alan, please go ahead.
Thank you. I'm a little confused as to what we're doing here. I'll go back as an example to the registry comment saying cyber squatting may be a reason to bar it, but there may be other breaches of RAs or RAAs which should not be reason for disqualification. When I read that, I say, well, that may well be true. Let's look at, somebody should be looking at what the other kinds of breaches are that might not be reasons for disqualification so that we can amend the policy to be appropriate. I'm not quite sure who's going to be doing it if we're not doing that. So just reading it and going on to the next one, I think we're missing the step of if indeed they have a valid point, and you know, we may agree that they don't. But if indeed they have a valid point, shouldn't we be looking at what we should be doing to modify the policy so that the issue is addressed?
Apologies. My approach to this was to read each comment per section.
Okay.
For example, here we have the ones for disqualified applicants and then stop and ask if anyone has feedback in regards to that, but we can definitely stop it.
Okay, fine. As I said, I walked into this late today, so I may not have understood what the modus operandi of what we're doing. That's fine with me. I just wanted to make sure we're not going to just discard it and not see whether we need to act on them. But go ahead.
No.
What you're doing is fine. I just didn't realize that is indeed what we're doing. Thank you.
Thank you, Alan. But good place anyways. I did just finish the section with that last nominate comment. But Alan brings up a very good point. The registry stakeholder says that a breach of an RA or RRA may happen for a number of reasons, but that shouldn't be grounds for disqualification. I think, as Alan has stated, I mean, what are the grounds, first of all, for the breach of an RA or RRA? And would that really actually not be something we need to consider for disqualification of applying for an HTLD in the future? Paul, you have your hand up. Please go ahead.
Thanks, Paul McGrady. I'm sorry I'm talking so much today. But I do think there's allegations of breach and then there's adjudicated breach, right? So if ICANN compliance or somebody else claims that there is a breach and it turns out there wasn't, that shouldn't count, obviously. If ICANN compliance claims that there's a breach, the other side maybe disagrees but jumps through some hoop that satisfies ICANN compliance, I think that's important. That, you know, distinction, some sort of, you know, settlement, everybody works out. There's also technical breaches, which is like, hey, you know, I didn't pay my bill last month. Oops, I have a new bookkeeper. Here's last month and this month. You know, that to me doesn't seem like it rises to the level of you know, that kind of bad faith activity that the cyber squatting bar was meant to, you know, take care of. But then there is, you know, big, you know, knockdown, drag out adjudicated by an arbitrator breach, you know, between a contracted party and ICANN. That could happen. And if that happens, maybe that's the kind of thing that this comment was meant to be, you know, weeding out from the process. But it seems like to me there's, you know, we can't just use the word breach as if it means everything in each of the possible contexts of things that could go wrong. I think we need to figure out what we mean, what level of breach, about what kinds of things. But I definitely think this is something that we should explore because I don't think one size fits all there. Thanks.
Thank you, Paul. Very good feedback indeed. I think that is something that we should explore definitely. Alan brought it up and Paul added to it. Let's just trying to think on how to act on this one. Let's take that back and we're going to look at specifically what type of breaches there are and how far down the rabbit hole that can go, but at the same time, see whether or not that is actually something that we should not be, that should not be considered for future disqualification. Does anyone else, would anyone else like to comment? Oh, and Steve, that is an action item. Hearing none, I'm going to
It's Alan. It may well be worth simply going back to the registry stakeholder group and asking for, you know, can they give us a few examples of the kind of breach that they do not feel would warrant it, and can we, and specifically, can they characterize them in some generic terms so that we could put words into the agreement? I mean, they're the ones that came up with the idea. Then let's put some onus back on them to say, fine, how would you address the issue?
Very good suggestion, Alan. Thank you. For the sake of time, I am going to move on to the next comment. So in our next... Sorry, my computer keeps going. Alan, you have something you want to say?
No, sorry.
So, slide 27. Afilius advocates for ensuring that ICANN is aware of changes in management or ownership structure and integrating ICANN compliance into the application review process. Legal entities should have cleared identified individuals in management positions, the very people with whom ICANN will interact and hold accountable. These are the parties ICANN should evaluate, both from a cursory legal screening as well as other criteria relevant to ICANN's mission of maintaining a secure and stable internet and promoting competition. This explicitly demands that ICANN be made aware of any changes in management or ownership structure. Through the application review process, changes would be a trigger for additional screening. History also provides relevant fitness information for ICANN. As noted in our response to 1.1.3 and 1.1.7, ICANN compliance should be integrated into the application review process as they are acutely aware of past and current performance. And I believe that's the end of this section in particular. Would anyone like to comment on this? I'm trying to digest it myself right now, how that would change the background screening in the future. Ellen, you have your hand up. Please go ahead. Ellen, you have the floor.
Sorry, I didn't press the right button. I can't comment on the first part, but I can comment on the last part on compliance. And I think we have an interesting situation that compliance should well be in a position to identify whether known entities they've worked with have had problems before. On the other hand, I would sense a strong reluctance in compliance to in fact do that, because in the past they have sort of said, you know, we're not there as finger pointers, we're just there to enforce the contract and you know, not go any further with what we discover because of our enforcement processes. So I wonder whether that is indeed practical or not, although it sounds like a reasonable thing to do.
Thank you, Ellen. And definitely, so that would relate specifically to future applicant, well, sorry, for subsequent procedures where ICANN complaints may have worked with the registry in the past, for example. Sorry, it's been a long day, sorry, a long 2 days without any sleep. Definitely something to consider for subsequent procedures. We have about 10 minutes left and two slides, and I'm going to just go through the comments very quickly, not to shun anybody's input, but to just make sure we can go through this material. But we do have these comments recorded, and we do have action items with them as well, so we will make sure to act upon them. If anyone does have anything specific that they do want to say, please raise your hand and I will call upon them. And once again, I've lost my screen. Okay, sorry. We are now on page 28. So BRG, John Poole, Registry Stakeholder Group, and ALAC provided input on timing of the background screen from the BRG. In respect of the timing of any due diligence that is required, this should be performed at an early stage of the application process, as the findings may disqualify applicants, stopping the entire process from having to be performed. However, if the applicant process is lengthy, ICANN may need to repeat some vetting processes prior to signing the RA, as circumstances and personnel may have experienced changes during the process period. Taking my co-chair hat off, and just to say, this did actually happen, at least with our clients. Putting my co-chair hat back on and moving towards John Poole's comment. Unless new facts emerge or more than 2 years have passed since the applicant last qualified, why screen twice? John? Moving on to slide 29. Background screening should be performed, sorry, from the Registry Stakeholder Group. Background screening should be performed at the time of application and upon changes to an application, as well as at any time that the information changes post-contracting. This allows for consistency of result and guards against a disqualified person or company gaining control of a TLD after the fact. From the ALAC, we have, on timing for screening, the ALAC believes that it should be both at the time of application to immediately weed out unsuitable applicants and at timing of contract signing to ensure that there have not been material changes in the application. Thank you. Does anyone have anything specific they would like to comment in regards to the timing of when the background screening should take place? In addition to the data, or to at least to the questions we have here, we were hoping to have Trang join us today to kind of give a input in regards to problems that were experienced in the 2012 round. But sorry. But one aspect that I wanted to explore as far as us getting more data was a really good question that I don't know the answer to, but was anyone disqualified from the 2012 round because of the background screen? I think it's a good question to ask, at least GDD up front. And based upon that, I think that we can see whether or not it was suitable, the timing was suitable originally. And the fact of, you know, providing the information anytime personnel changes, that remained a requirement from the 2012 application. So that was a requirement along with the application, and from what I understand, and it continues as a registry, continues to, well, act as a registry. They do need, in my understanding, they do need to provide background information each time board of directors or officers change. But that would be consistent. So the comments here would be consistent with what is already in place. On the aspect of timing, whether or not it needs to be performed twice, if the officers do change, then it is my understanding that that information be provided, and ICANN would subsequently also undergo that background screening at that time. So, is timing really a question that we need to be asking? If it's done once at the time of application, we need to look at whether or not it needs to be performed twice. Should we lose the, for example, should we lose the aspect of having consistent information provided to ICANN and ICANN undergoing background screenings each time that information is provided? Just some questions to consider. We have 5 minutes. If anyone would like to comment on that, just raise your hand. Greg, I don't think it'd be like random drug test screening, but that's also something to consider, perhaps. Hearing none, I think this is a good place to stop. So we have our action items, and we will hopefully get input from GDD in regards to their experience with the background screenings, but next week we will be jumping into closed generics. So bring your so I hope everyone will be ready for their next week, and we will see you then. I'll give you back 4 minutes of your day. Thank you very much.
Thanks, everyone. Have a good day. If you disconnect.